would be on the question whether, if you set up these procedures, very minimal procedures, and nobody did give an inmate notice, his mother couldn't visit for the next 6 months, would he be able to recover damages?
I think he might possibly be able to recover damages if there was a total failure of the process. If it got down to a question of whether or not the decision was correct, I think this court would clearly apply a superintendent versus Walpole type standard to that situation. I think a total failure of the process, it might go as to whether or not it would be a qualified immunity question at that point. I think a total failure of the process would clearly be actionable. One of the problems, I believe, with the analysis of the state is that it takes in a due process analysis, first, I think, in an analysis such as this, you look to the Constitution, see whether or not there is a constitutional right to visitation. It is clear there is no constitutional right to visitation. Then you look to the actions of the state officials to see whether or not the state officials have created any sort of right. What the state is asking us to do at that point is to come back, on the back end of derivative due process and impose on the backside, in essence, a substantive due process theory that it be only in matters of some sort of critical importance. And I think that is beyond the scope of what derivative due process is all about. I believe you have to look to what did the state officials intend. And I think clearly in this case there is ample evidence, both because of the consent decree and of the regulations that were issued, that they knew exactly what they were doing.
But let me ask you one more question along the lines I was asking from. Basically, any federal court decree laying down rules for a federal prison is based on the Constitution, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
And what business does any court decree have laying down rules for the operation of a prison in a federal court that isn't based on some sort of constitutional right of the prisoners?
Clearly, the initial litigation is based on constitutional premises, but I think nothing prohibits the state of Kentucky volitionally granting additional rights, particularly in a consent decree context. Consent decrees often will literally give the state a roadmap on how to run its prison for the next 20 years.
And what's the basis for that?
The give and take of that is that any party, when negotiating a consent decree, gives up certain things because they want a consent decree.
But doesn't the judge have to look at the decree, though, and make sure that it's the kind of thing he has jurisdiction to enter?
Yes, sir. I think I believe that even though you may step beyond what is constitutional, the court can still have authority over that consent decree, even for visitation. I don't think there's any requirement that this court, that I'm aware of, that only constitutional issues be brought up in a consent decree. They're wide-ranging.
What about in a litigated decree?
In a litigated decree, if the judge was to step beyond and step independent state action, there'd be a problem. That'd be subject to reversal by the court. The parties have agreed that, yes, we're going to do this in return for this. For example, one of the things that they agreed to do was to have the prison population of the Kentucky State Reformatory at a certain level within so many years. Possibly if I had gone to trial and settled the case, Judge Johnson might have ordered a quicker timetable to bring the population down to a level where it would be constitutional. Of course, population in and of itself is not a constitutional question. It's a totality, population being only one of the factors.
Of course, in this case, we're talking about procedural due process.
Right.
Are we not?
Yes, sir.
And I thought the rationale of those cases was that the state is omitting a constitutional duty if it doesn't provide a procedure.
That's correct.
Doesn't the consent decree automatically have its own procedure?
For a violation of the consent decree, and that would be the traditional contempt powers of the district.
Well, didn't you allege a violation of the consent decree here?
At the initial district court level, yes, sir.
And you were in the consent decree hearings, weren't you?
This was done separately. Not a part of substantial compliance, I think, about a year prior, Your Honor. This was a more or less routine motion during my monitoring of the consent decree.
But this wasn't a separate 1983 suit.
No, sir. It was as a portion of the court's monitoring of the consent decree.
You're invoking a mechanism which has very sophisticated procedures. So
yes,
I don't see how the state has omitted a duty by failing to provide some other procedure.
The consent decree, the
you don't have to go before a prison official. You can go before a United States district judge.
He indicated that the procedures there were constitutional. Your Honor's question is whether or not if an inmate were to tomorrow be denied prison, be denied his, quote, open visitation, could I then not go back and request that the judge put the case back on active status and request that the judge hold the state of contempt because this inmate did not have a open visitation was being denied? That is correct. However, I think that the Sixth Circuit, in saying that we're not going to make this a consent decree matter, that the consent decree is only a portion of it. The consent decree in and of itself was only a portion of the mandatory language required to reach the to give an entitlement to due process. I believe that probably standing alone, the regulations would have been sufficient, absent a consent decree. But because of the nature of the beast, so to speak, that mandatory language is there, it buttresses the consent decree. And I believe because, of, in essence, the double mandatory language gives this court a stronger basis to say that in this case, there was a liberty interest created by the mandatory language of the consent decree, by the correctional policies and procedures, and the language therein. Thank you. I believe this court should affirm the Sixth Circuit.
Thank you, Mr. Elder. Ms. Jones, you have 3 minutes remaining.
Your Honor, I think it's important to point out that in the consent decree, although the parties did agree to continue open visitation and maintain visitation at their current level, the parties, the attorneys for the respondents agreed to the procedures that were in place at the time. The procedures that were in place at the time were not changed for over 6 years until the motion was filed, never required any kind of hearing when we denied a visitor. And I think that's very important. That was also in place at the signing of the consent decree. So there was no requirement agreed to by the parties to have a due process hearing before any party was denied visiting at the institution. And that was in place at the time we signed the consent decree, and that was agreed to by parties on both sides. This did not come up until 6 years later after the consent decree was signed. The Court of Appeals did not rule that the consent decree was the motivating force for the finding of the mandatory procedures that gave rise to the right. The Court of Appeals found that it was the procedures themselves that contained the language that gave rise to the liberty interest that requires the implementation of the Due Process Clause. And I think more importantly, it is necessary for this court to draw the line because of the burden that is going to be imposed on state officials if this analysis is continued in the manner in which it's being applied below now.
Just as I'm curious, when a visitor wants to come and visit, do they just show up?
Yes, Your Honor.
They just show up. There's no writing or anything else?
That's correct.
And who passes on whether the visitor gets in?
There is a staff person, a line officer there. If the staff person believes that there is some problem, then he notifies the duty officer, and the duty officer makes the decision on whether to deny the visit. But there is no list of permissible visitors. That's what open visitation is. Anyone can come during those hours to visit that inmate. I think it's limited by numbers and numbers of adults and unlimited children, but they may show up during the hours of visiting. Therefore, we request that this court seriously consider drawing some distinctions between daily management procedures and those procedures which affect substantive nature of confinement, release from confinement, and the very duration of confinement. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Jones. The case is submitted. We'll hear argument next.